Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on the website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Now, if you find tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And if you get a chance, please check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
What's doing?
Oh, just enjoying life. You know, the weather's being a bit psychotic, but I'm not complaining too much. It went from, in the mid to high 80s to the 50s. Right now we're down to 49. You just never know what you're going to get this time of year. All in all, life is good. Looking forward to hanging out with you as always and other cool poets and delving into the poetry and, you know, just a nice busy day today with running errands and dinner and all that. My daughter unexpectedly brought a friend over, which, you know, considering she hasn't done that in years, I didn't mind at all. You know, I figured if she was willing to bring a friend in, then, you know, great. You know, I'm happy. So what you doing?
Nothing. All quiet.
Quiet is good. It can be nice and relaxing. Got the birds singing and all that.
Yeah, the squirrels are Watch a squirrel fall 30 feet, land on his belly with a big whomp. He gets up and runs away.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The squirrels get crazy this time of year. They're so hyper and busy trying to gather food and, you know, chasing each other around. It's fun to watch them, that's for sure. We got all kinds. It's Wisconsin always has all kinds, but it seems like here in the town I live in now, there's one section of town where it's all red squirrels. There's another section where it's like gray squirrels. But for some reason around here, you actually will see all three. You'll see gray, well, black, but that's just a different version of gray. And then you'll see the chatty little red squirrels, which are just opinionated little cusses, aren't they?
What, no Rockies?
No, and no Bullwinkles either. You have to go more up north to see those. Yep, and I see Robbie on the board. Hello, Robbie. Good to see you. And, he has the same kind of all-over-the-place weather. Yep. All right, well, for tonight's topic, we actually have three contests, or rights from three contests. Our main contest is the artwork of Georgi Korosov, who I highly recommend checking out, especially if you like the cubism style art, or even if you don't like it, still check him out for his bold use of colors and geometric shapes. I think he's really intriguing. And then the other two contests were both poem prompts. One was, let's see here, what were they? The first poem prompt was and these were 8 spots only contests, The Armadillo by Elizabeth Bishop, and the next poem prompt was For Fiddle Dee Dee by John Hollander. Definitely have a nice versatile lineup of poetry tonight that I'm looking forward to. And with that being said, what do you got for us first, Rex?
Music Lingers with Jazz Fingers by Jenny the Deep. That was yours.
All right. The buzzing in my fingers has made it clear there is no music here without you, dear, without you, my dear. When the sun disappears, the moon reappears, playing on my darkest of fears. But luckily, you are here to kiss away my tears. When you kiss me, the sweetest melody plays, a symphony no one else can ever replace. Gently as if on a trumpet, our lips vibrate. Dancing passionately, jazz fingers palpitate. The night brightens up as we waltz to the bed, while on repeat the foxtrot plays in my head. Our synchronized harmony colors me red. Let us tango till the evening's dead. End poem. Oh, man, that's a wonderful romantic write by Jenny. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like the fact that she left the tango to the last line, but also dropped in a waltz and a foxtrot. The scene does kind of hit on that note to the tango, so that plays well with off of what she got out of the picture itself, especially the rolling in singular tones for each stanza, doing mono rhyme for each one. Ear, clear here, and dear for the first one. Then doubling up with disappears, reappears, fears, and tears for the second. And plays, nice touch of that, and replays, vibrate, and palpitate. So I like that angle. Plus, she took this the buzzing in my ear kind of hits on that idea of the phone call. Can we meet? And then everything just unfolds from there.
Interpretation. I guess a booty call isn't as romantic as I was thinking. I guess when I see lines like "there is no music here without you, my dear," but luckily you are here to kiss away my tears. I was thinking a more personal and deeper romantic relationship. But sometimes, you know, that comfort can be found within that one night stand. And yes, I too really liked how she brought in the foxtrot and the waltz, like specific dances, and how she used the imagery of playing the trumpet. I remember when I first learned to play the trumpet. Well, technically it wasn't the trumpet. We couldn't afford the trumpet, and somebody gave us a free cornet, which is basically like a short, fat trumpet. And I was learning to play it in grade school. And, yeah, you do have to – you purse your lips together, and, you know, you just – for a lot of those horn-type brass instruments, there's a specific way which lends it – to place the lips, which lends itself very well to kind of a sensual imagery. And I did yet like the use of the word palpitate. So, you know, I'm going to take this a bit more romantic than a one-night stand, but at the same time, I think it works well for both angles. And what do we got next, Rex?
Oh, what? Chess, the Battle Plan by Blue Knight 76. The two kingdoms declared war, messengers meant a county away at the narrowing borders. The horse always attacked from the side, then soldiers fell to his blade. Ministers were always a crooked lot, finding loopholes along the connecting counties, defeating the soldiers. A queen stood by a king, she who wielded the greatest power, who was welcome along every road, the underdog who advanced regally, the one whose deceit fell ministers and forts. The elephants and forts came advancing, forts built with shields and men, those that shone in mammoth bravery, yet inflexible along enemy lines. The cunning king did build his fort with the soldiers and work to protect him, while his knight attacked with arrows, even from within his walls. The queen was the last to advance on a field, calm yet fierce her strike. The female soldiers advanced slowly, crossing enemy lines their goal, slowly reaching the opponent king, then with a twist of fate, seated as a new queen, avenging her own, the second queen is ready to assassinate one and all. The women were wrapped in gold and diamonds, yet the sword, like their hearts, hid within a deceptive antenna, ready to create and kill in need. Indian legends coined the chess with all the real-life master performers that found a country they fought multiple battles and wrote history along centuries. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Blue Knight 76. I really like the imagery and the storytelling in this. I like how it has a mythological feel to it, but at the same time, because of her end lines, it tells the history, the deep and, you know, just enchanting history of a country, of a region. Indian legends coined the chess game with all the real-life master performers that found a country. They fought multiple battles and wrote history along centuries. Yeah, and that is so true. I mean, the history of India goes back for centuries. Like most countries, especially older countries, it is filled with, you know, strife and victories and, you know, unexpected twists and turns and all the things that help to make a people. I really like particularly that, and I'm always a big fan when somebody brings in strong women, You know, the queen stood by her king, she who wielded the greatest power, who was welcomed along every road, the underdog who advanced regally, the one whose deceit fell ministers and forts. And then that she brings in the female soldiers advanced slowly, crossing enemy lines, their goal slowly reaching the opponent king. And I like how she uses a game of chess for an extended metaphor to show the battles and the pivotal moments that shaped a country's history. Yeah, really a wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the playoff is the picture in this, which is a modern setting with two opposing women. So drawing off that angle, and the fact that she's going in with counties just kind of hits at the idea of borderlines between two opposing sects, so to speak. The idea of being these are the two up front dealing in the moment instead of having the infighting, which is what the usual outcome would be. And that's why we're getting into the whole thing with the pieces themselves and how they would be reacting in this scene, because it kind of looks like a coffee shop with a chess table and two women sitting around playing. And one's already got, I think it looks like she's already taken a queen, it's in her hand. So it's almost a victory in the moment at that point. The other one's looking a little glum. So the idea of playing out a cityscape, so to speak, with these two is a fun thought. And with all the angles that are that rolled into this, the rolling in the female soldiers, the idea of advancing slowly, and then the surrounding nuance that you get out of that. I like it. Different.
Me too. And I'm glad you brought up the glum look on the one woman's face, because I have to admit, one of the things I found fascinating about his artwork, but also, you know, made it challenging to choose the right prompts, at least in my mind, was the fact that a lot of the women, no matter what else was going on around them, had a very similar look on this face, almost like a look of being either discontent or glum. So I really tried to find images that offered up more than just the expression on the woman's face. But it, I'm glad you brought that up, and very cool comment. All right. And what do we got next?
Sweet Debauchery by Betty Page.
And Betty was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
Sweet debauchery. When in Rome, let's play to some secret hideaway. Be my queen, sweetie. Find some paradise. Wanna get lucky? Roll dice. Wear my cherry dress, lush, bright red lipstick, golden desire shimmers, taints royal robes white. Peeking through curtains, in velvet rooms tied with ropes, helpless divine prey. Indulging passions, sweetest pure debauchery, cascading nectars, spilling flows of cream, peekaboo peepholes wide open, eyes in disarray, chaos caressing, mind blown, obscene, wild playground, wickedly captures, runaway yet seen, erotic, snakes, enchanting, deeply inserting. She's vibrating high, thoroughly, viciously, writes, views, fascinated. End poem.
great reading right there, Betty. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And what did you think of this one, Rex?
Well, she wrote that picture for all it's worth. And
yeah.
She did roll into some double entendre thoughts in the metaphors used with the elusive peekaboo peepholes wide open, and then erotic snakes enchanting, deeply inserting. And then again, she's vibrating high. So this walks into quite the, as she put it, sweet debauchery scenery.
It really does. It really does. Yes, and for those who can't see the picture, it's wonderfully suggestive, probably a little more than suggestive, but not vulgar or explicit, but it has what looks like a king from ancient biblical times. Maybe it could be ancient Rome, it could be ancient, not necessarily Egypt, doesn't look Egypt, but, you know, I would say, you know, somewhere along the ancient biblical times. And there's what appears to be a dancer, and he's got his hand raised as if he's going to spank her. And, you know, there's a queen watching in the background. And, yes, Betty definitely grabbed a hold of this painting and just ran with it. And I really think, like, right out of the gate, she captured the essence of the painting. You know, when she says, "When in Rome, let's play." You know, first of all, you know, it's that saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But it also hints at, in the opening lines and all the way through it, at some of the, and even with the title, some of the practices of ancient Rome, especially when it comes to parties and indulgences. And I really like the imagery in this, especially indulging passion, sweetest pure debauchery, cascading nectar, spilling flows of cream, peekaboo, peepholes wide open, eyes in disarray, chaos caressing. Chaos caressing is a wonderful alliteration and a great line. Like I said, it really is a captivating, sensual, and erotic rite, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Here we go. By the Wall by Eski. That was yours.
All right. It's so cold here by the wall, in the eternal shadows. The fires rage on the other side, where each man sees his end in his very beginning, pruned by his disabilities, yet measured by expectation. And yet they have to put him to sleep. You may touch his corpse if you want. After all, heaven will be yours alone. But fear the cold as it seeps into your empty heart. Capitulation becomes memory, gnawing mechanically on all of your tomorrows. Stranger to the sound of your own living voice, blowing dandelion clocks with staccato breath, the seeds of what you were scattered on a careless wind. End poem. And what a wonderful write. By Eski, rich in metaphor and imagery. And what did you think, Rex?
Well, it is on death. That last stanza is really good. But the opening, by the wall, it's so cold here by the wall in the eternal shadows. That's almost like the morgue room being refrigerated in the moment where each man sees his end in the very beginning. I like that. Pruned by his disabilities, yet measured by expectation. Great lines. But I do like the back end of this. Stranger to the sound of your own living voice, blowing dandelion clocks with staccato breaths, the seeds of what you were scattered on a careless wind. Death met in that moment. And as death is met, those last breaths do get scattered on whatever wind is there, whether it be conditioned air or real air.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. And, yeah, you know, at first when I saw the poem, line, put him to sleep, I thought, well, is this about, you know, a pet, putting a pet to sleep? And I looked back and I realized that with, you know, the mention of where each man sees his end in his very beginning, pruned by his disabilities, yet measured by expectation. It is the idea of looking at a person who's dying. And you know, I feel like there's a sense of judgment here, either a judgment of other people or a judgment of self, you know, and where it says, I mean, all the way through, I kind of get that impression. But I do like pruned by his disabilities, yet measured by expectation, and yet they have to put him to sleep. You may touch his corpse if you want. After all, heaven will be yours alone. And I think those lines especially come across to me as being about judging who we think has the right to go into heaven and who we think doesn't. I also like where it says, gnawing mechanically on all of your tomorrows, as if you're just not really emotionally thinking, but rather just living day to day in such a mechanical basis way, you know, that, you don't take into account individual situations. And you don't take into account really getting to know who you are and the seeds of what you were scattered in a careless wind. You know, all it takes, I feel like the careless wind could very well be careless words. People that, you know, I feel like, at least this is how it interprets to me, is that the first part is about you judging other people. And then a reminder that other people will judge you, and with their judgment will come those careless words that will break apart the person that you were meant to be. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
The Crush of Flesh, Double Trigen Refrain by Liquid Mind Forever. Is this the prison of contempt, this flesh of salt disdain? From Sodom's days, none are exempt of gout and sexist reign. A breast, a thigh, a rounded ass, we worship these, we say high mass. A breast, a thigh, a breast, a thigh, a woman's nigh, a man's harass. Is this the tempest Circe's thigh, the maelstrom's tolfin gold? Cherus her cheeks he'll seek to buy, blood mysteries, alchemy sold, with lips of ice, fiery compounds, her hips unnerved, curved whispered sounds, with lips of ice, she'll tantalize flamboyant mounds. In cattle cards, rape scars of wars, tough as she's driven, far afield what crop she yields, Mars, the gift she's been given. An objet d'art can raise the bar to paramour or movie star. An objet d'art, she's glamour's beer, she'll sell at par. Will nettle chattel craze deceit, tis man whose prick indites, where bosoms and strong scents secrete, tis mead in sight. Long gorgeous legs extend, excite, her youth lies ripped, fresh lips mesh tight. Long gorgeous legs, her nipples pink, he sucks, he bites. Who pays the price for such as she? Can she be trusted who connives, survives? Death's honeybee, a trick to trap and glue the motley crew of hungry fools. Who thinks she's his, she makes the rules. The motley crew, his scepter hers, she's deathly cruel. Is this the prison of contempt, her flesh is crushed and meshed? His authorship, her grip, Mein Kampf, his bargain, thigh and breast, of breast and thigh and buttocks round, she's forced his chains he's ever bound, of breast and thigh, of breast and thigh, his whimpers muffled under gown, and poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really felt like the cadence of your read worked really well with the form. And, you know, I'm not an expert on forms, but I always am of the opinion that, you know, when they're read aloud, they should flow nicely, which this one does. Also, you know, any form that uses repetition, really, you know, the repetitive lines should be strong and stand out and help to drive the point of the poem. I mean, on a technical level, this is wonderful. Great rhyme and flow. You know, I really like how this speaks on the idea of one's sexuality attempted to use against, when others attempt to use your sexuality against you, but you end up using it in return. And whether that's a thing of empowerment or rather just you agreeing with the prison or the, I shouldn't say prison, but the, what's the word I'm looking for? Let's see. Like when people get an idea, like people put you into this box and they say, okay, this is you. You're, you know, this beautiful sexual woman and this is who you'll always be. And she just kind of accepts it. And whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. But I do think, I do see kind of for me the idea of a woman who turns things on her head. I really like how, and of course I do understand these are human parts too, but where she says, abreast the thigh, abreast the thigh, because it makes me think of the whole idea of parts of a chicken, like, you know, torn apart for the to be passed around the table. And then the blood mysteries alchemy soul with lifts of ice, fiery compounds, her hips unnerved, curved, whispered sounds. So here's this woman who, you know, she has these curves that radiate heat and sexuality, and yet there's a coldness to her lips, a coldness to her words. And perhaps because she's kind of been molded into that. It's a great story told also. I think there's some wonderful humor at the end, especially where it says, his whimpers muffled under gown. That part, I have to admit, made me chuckle. You know, sometimes you might get yourself into a predicament you weren't expected to be into. You know, just a wonderfully clever write the idea of sexuality used and abused. I think another part or the part where that comes in is where it says, her youth lies ripped, fresh lips meshed tight. So here's a woman who has lost her innocence, who has lost her ability that comes in youth to trust people. And therefore, there's a kind of a turning in who she becomes. I feel like the end line, you kind of get the idea of her snapping his neck with those strong thighs. Not that she says that, but I can just, for some reason, that image pops into my head. And you probably already knew this, but I didn't. And for anybody else who didn't, there's two definitions to a creche. One is the Northern American English, which is a model or tableau representing the scene of Jesus Christ's birth, displayed in homes or public places at Christmas. And the other one is the British English, which is a nursery where babies and young children are cared for during the working day. So I think that really adds, knowing the definition of that word, really adds to the depth of the poem on how a woman's body can be a place of holiness, a place where a child can be carried. And there could be more to it. I mean, obviously there's more to it, but that's some of the thoughts that I get, and I think it's a wonderful write. And Rex, you did a great read of this. Your thoughts?
It bites at the reality within the duality of the piece itself, because does offer up the questions. The thought of this flesh of salt disdain, this question there from Sodom's days, another example of doubt and sexual flame. But then she also gets into is this the Tempest Circe style? The maelstrom's take, token gold. She rues her cheeks, she'll seek to buy blood mysteries, alchemy sold, with lips of ice, fire compounds. Her nips unnerved, curved whispered sounds, with lips of ice. She'll tantalize, flamboyant sound. You've got the duality in here. On the one hand, she is that stable mare, so to speak, selling herself for what she can get, or just looking into that angle of moving up the chain, so to speak, in getting all that she wants. But she does hit on the other angle. Cattle cause rapes, cause the wars, tough and as she's driven. So the other angle of the on the other side of that coin. And she gets hit on it again with a metal channel grace, deceit. And then again, who pays the price of such as she? Can she be trusted who connives, survives? Death's honeybee, a trick to trap and blue, motley crew of hungry fools. Who thinks she sits? She makes the rules. The motley crew, his scepter hers. She's deathly cruel. So again, there's a duality in this. Is it the game she plays? And what's the outcome for it? That back end obviously hits on it. His whimper's muffled under gown. That you can run that any number of ways, whether it's literality or under gown, meaning she now has that silk purse within firm grasp and holds all the cards to what comes next, whether it's the angle of indulgence or whether it's the angle of getting paid off for that which she thinks he's indulging in.
I like that. Great observations, Rex. I really like how you comment on the duality of the poem, but also on how the ending can be both literal or metaphorical. That is very true. That is very true. And that definitely adds to the depth of the poem. So excellent comment. And what do we have next?
Sassy Little Mama by Julie Butler.
All right. I'm a sassy little mama. Welcome to my home. I call it my little blue cottage. Goes with my red round hat and statuesque pose. Now when I shift my yesterdays into today and shoulders into bodies that aren't mine, I simply stay still and composed. Lights around the abnormal almonds come and show me flavor. It's time to curse all I've wasted, to be pissy for never having tasted the butter lights of brotherhood. Only regurgitated regret loiters to savor. I suppose I misunderstood that murder doesn't just happen in forested wooden cabins, but in quaint fairy-guarded cottages too. Now, no way can that be fucking true. End poem. That one's great. I like that. I like that. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, there's a bit of truth in that last line, because she hit on what she got. Now, when I shift my yesterdays into today and shoulders into bodies that aren't mine, I simply stay still and composed. Bodies that aren't mine. Okay? She's already hinted at the outcome. Lights around the abnormal almond come and show me flavor. that kind of hits with the picture itself. It's time to curse all I wasted, to be pissy for never having tasted the butter lights of brotherhood. Only regurgitated regret loiters to savor. Again, a little telltale sign of maybe those bodies weren't kept around long enough to savor. And then the implication. I suppose I misunderstood that murder doesn't just happen in forests and wooden cabins, but in quaint, fairy-dotted cottages, too. And if that's a cottage, that's one hell of a backdrop for a cottage.
That is. That is. Yep. Yep. And great comment there, Rex. I really enjoyed the attitude and the dark humor of this. This sounds like a TV show that I would like to watch. And right away it opens with attitude. I'm a sassy little mama. Welcome to my home. I call it my little blue cottage. Goes with my red round hat and statuesque pose. So, you know, between the blue cottage and the red round hat, you know, you just, I don't know, like she really sets the stage for, you know, thinking that there's, you know, just a bit of a fun innocence here. But like you said, as soon as she starts, when she gets to the line, bodies that aren't mine, you know, she's setting the stage for something darker. And when she says, I feel like she gets a bit more into the character and, you know, the darker side of the character when she says, to be pissy for never having tasted the butter lights of butter brotherhood. That's a mouthful to say, the butter lights of brotherhood. But, you know, the idea, I think that she's never, the character has never really emotionally connected, you know, in a close way with other people. And that ending really just slaps you upside the head and says, you know what, you have this idea of where and when murders always happen, and guess what? You're wrong. So, you know, I like that. I do think it has this great dark humor and works very well with the given picture prompt. So very cool. And what do we got next, Rex?
Another Day by Ben Hart. Make it. I wanted to make it to another day, only to find myself talking to stranger worlds away who felt the same, and it took some time to see the lean monster keeping me here in din. Was just myself with a condolent heart and lonely lips telling myself not to wander from the path through self-oblivion, not to knock on doors of thought locked with good reason, not to leave before the doors open and the eyes blind themselves in the afterlife, not to answer the call of dim based on a feeling but on the length of the fight. And they'll tell you is rest, but that doesn't seem right. And all those strangers? Good company they made, even if they did slip out of sight. Dealing. And I couldn't tell you how it felt when a friend I thought I'd fooled said he wanted me to come back to our time on this little piece of earth, but to be held by someone who understood. It's only upon having that we know what we lacked, and that's a good thing, no matter how much it hurts. Failing. I wonder if God forbid our love and so withheld me from your eye and beyond that blue truth. I believe he has it out for me because he keeps that part of me alive that kills itself over you, and there is nothing I can do but ache and break and try to breathe through it. Spared. Had we picked up where we left, I think I'd be lonely for it because through your death, the world corrected itself and gave back wonders I couldn't spare or live without now. So I am sorry, love, but I will not rescue you from the cold black ground. Those days are gone, and those versions of me that would have dropped everything and buried right beside you, 6 feet deep. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. It just, your voice fits so perfectly with Ben's words. As always, Ben has offered up an extremely emotive and impressive rite, strong imagery and metaphors. I like how that the first part speaks on the idea of finding oneself and how sometimes we have to turn to our conversations with other people to find that. And sometimes we have to turn away from other people and look inward, you know, telling myself not to wander from the path through self-oblivion, not to knock on doors of thought locked with good reason, not to leave before the doors open and the eyes blind themselves in the afterlife. I like how not to knock on doors of thought locked with good reason is that idea of you need to let a thought go. You need to not obsess over something because it's something that's already, you know the answer. It's been resolved and you might not like the answer, but it's not going to change. So you need to move forward. And the third part, failing, I wonder if God forbid our love and so withheld me from your eye and beyond that blue truth, I believe he has it out for me because he keeps that part of me alive that kills itself over you. You know, again, we have that idea of not being able to let go and, you know, but then comes kind of within that end part, this spared the idea of moving forward, of healing, you know, of saying, you know, where he says, so I am sorry, love, but I will not rescue you from the cold black ground. Those days are gone. And I like that that can be literal. I mean, not literal completely, but the idea of, you know, no longer, you know, holding on to letting memories of someone who died just, you know, obsessively take over your mind. But I take it more as a metaphor and the idea that, you know, the relationship is dead. It cannot be revived. And in order to truly find yourself, which goes back to the first part, in order to truly find yourself, you have to be able to not bury yourself beneath the weight of what is dead, what is not going to be resurrected. So just an amazing rite all the way through and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Stages of grief. I think it's on that first stanza. Keeping me here in dim, and then the second time he raises that one. What was it? Oh, damn. Okay. Oh, it doesn't matter. It wasn't in the first. The dim representing limbo, that place where everything is clouded, and you don't see a way out because you don't see anything in the light itself. Oh, there it is. Not to answer the call of dim, based on a feeling. But on the length of the fight. And they'll tell you death is rest, but that doesn't seem right. Yeah, there are notations there, but as part of the stages of grief, you don't look at things that way. Then you hit on the idea of dealing. The questioning, but to be held by someone who understood. So there's a little bit there about not having someone around that one can talk to, cry to, or whatever needs to come out in the moment. Then there's the falling, the thought of cursing God. Is this to be my life, so to speak? He's already moved on a bit. He said that kills itself over you, and there's nothing I can do but ache and break and try to breathe through it. He's already gotten to a point where the failing is starting to break through, even though he's cursed God a bit. The spared angle is where the acceptance comes and the move forward actually makes itself known. Because he hits on, where is it? Oh, here it is. because through your death, the world corrected itself and gave back wonders I couldn't spare or live without now. So I am sorry, love, but I will not rescue you from the cold black ground. Those days are gone, and those versions of me that would have dropped everything are buried right beside you, 6 feet deep. Which come to terms with that death and understands the need to crawl out of that burial hole that he created for himself and move into the light once more and live.
I like them. Oh, I hear myself echoing. Oh, good, it stopped. It was just that one time. All right, but yeah, I like how you brought up the stages of grief, and that made me think about the idea of how everybody grieves differently, but there are the stages, but oftentimes you go through them in different ways. So great observations there, Rex. All right, what do we got next?
Bitch of Love by Hat, who just joined us once more.
Yes. Good to see her on the board. Good to know she's listening in. Hello, Hat. All right, and this is Pinch of Love by Hat. A couple sitting, eyes just for two, hands leaning skin on skin across the table. Cracked oil portraits hung on the walls stare at them, half hidden and blackened by the candle smoke and a thick layer of varnish. They eat by candlelight, salmon mousse with toast, turkey with sweet potatoes, and carrots garnished with red wine. Two glasses of red dry clink. The ring on her finger glistens. Last guests have left. They sit with their fingers entwined. He kisses the inside of her wrist, and she runs slim fingers of her hand through his unruly hair. Down her cheeks, salty waterfalls fall, for he is leaving for the battlefield. End poem. Aww. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, there is quite the scene painted. Actually, it's like an old French cafe, so to speak. Cracked oil portraits hung on the wall, stare at them, half hidden in black by the candle smoke and a thick layer of varnish. And then the meal itself, eat by candlelight, salmon mousse with toast, turkey with sweet potatoes and carrots garnished with red wine, two glasses of red dry clink, the ring on her finger glistens. And then the guests, they seem to be young lovers in the moment, toasting that which is theirs in the moment, until you get to those last two lines, which tell a very different story. It is the end of an evening. And that which comes next is something she is definitely not looking forward to, and he probably won't be once she gets there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do like endings that have a twist, that really have an emotional impact. And I liked your observation on the idea that it seems to be set in like a French cafe. You know, I kind of had the feeling more of it being set in their home, surrounded by family and friends, especially with the mention of the oil portraits and the candle smoke. And I don't know. I could be wrong, but the fact that guests are brought up. But I think either way it works, and you're right. It's like they're having this beautiful, comfortable evening, romantic, surrounded by family and friends. And then those last two stanzas really tell the full scope of the story. You know, down her cheeks, salty waterfalls fall, for he is leaving for the battlefield. And you realize that this isn't just any other romantic, fun evening with family and friends, but rather a goodbye party, you know, a farewell party, and, you know, hope to see you again. And her attention to detail is wonderful. I really like how she brings in specific foods like salmon mousse with toast, turkey with sweet potatoes and carrots garnished with red wine. I mean, that all just sounds delicious to me. And just a wonderful write. And Pinch of Love, that's a great title, you know, speaking on the idea that the food is prepared with love. And, you know, the sweetheart is, you know, sent off to war with, you know, grief and love. And amazing right hats and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
The Beautiful Housewife by Cedar Chapman. I scratch the morning out of my eyes, but the fog sticks to my pupils like plaster of Paris. Jugs of Java juice can't seem to shake off this perpetual haze as I sit on my patio and stare at blurry white pigeons break through the solar ribbons bleeding through my cataracts. I'm idle in a pandemic postpartum with stacks of cursive rhetoric tossed all over the floor, each page whitewashed by cheap meter and meaningless metaphors. Just another barren queen who's stuck on a chessboard and lathered in emerald silk, wishing sturgeon caviar with strawberry pop candy because it ushers me back to my youth. With a glass full of afternoon burgundy in one hand, I toss my red shawl over the balcony and watch it spiraling and somersault down. Would anybody pick it up, I wondered, while sipping my wine? Then staring at the pavement 100 feet below, would anybody even notice at all? And boom.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Cedar Chapman. And I have to say congratulations to him on a well-deserved front page pick. I really thought this had brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through. I feel like he's really captured that painting, which is of a woman sitting on a chair with a red cloak on the back. And there's a red cross on the chair, which I think is a symbolism of one of the Catholic knighthoods. And there's a dove in front of her. What's that?
Knight Templar.
That's it. Yes. The dove in front of her with the light coming from it represents the Holy Spirit. And then there's papers that she's letting drop to the ground, which I'm not sure what the papers are, but I think that leaves the imagination open. It looks like most likely that it's a letter. But I really like how he brings us in to this woman's moment. I thought some of his word choice, I mean, many of his word choices were great. Like, instead of just saying coffee, jugs of Java juice can't seem to shake off. Oh, wait, Java juice is a real thing. I was thinking coffee, but no, it is a real thing. I forget. We don't have that around here, but, and you know, sometimes we just try to get into the familiar. I'm idle in a pandemic postpartum with stacks of cursive rhetoric tossed all over the floor, each page whitewashed by cheap meter and meaningless metaphor. You know, trying to be able to express yourself, I feel like there's this idea of trying to find that something that makes you feel fulfillment. And you're not finding it. And I get that throughout the write. And just another barren queen who's stuck on a chessboard and lathered in emerald silk, wishing sturgeon caviar was strawberry pop candy because it ushers me back to my youth. And I like that because, to me, it speaks on the idea of, again, of you know, innocence lost and discontent. I think between the artwork itself and his word choices, there's this look at somebody who really hasn't found where they belong. You know, feels a sense of rejection. You know, from all the people that they know. You know, perhaps they're trying to get into, you know, perhaps where they're at. Like, I kind of have the idea of, I'm going to say, a small fish in a big pond, the idea that she's important where she is, but it's not enough for her. She's a figurehead. She's nothing more than something pretty to look at. And then when Peter uses the imagery of tossing the red shawl over the balcony, and would anyone pick it up, I wonder, while sipping my wine, then staring at the pavement 100 feet below, would anybody even notice at all? And it becomes this introspection, this look at the idea of this woman's head. Would anybody even notice if I fell from this balcony? Would it even matter to anybody? Yeah, so just an amazing write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the picture just does offer up perfunctory thought. You've got the Knights Templar symbolism. You've got the red cloak that might be papal in meaning. The emerald wrap that she's in, that hits on the idea of wealth and standing. And he does use the white blur as a pigeon, yet that seems to be because of its full and plump, that's more of a dove. And the papers that are rolling out of the hand are, you can look at that as, there's too many for a Dear John letter. So this might actually be the thought of a letter from the front where it's a death notice. Or at least it would be a letter coming from the officer of whomever she is missing in the moment, telling her of the husband's bravery, the fact that he's passed, and they're sorry for his loss, and they'll miss him so much, and all that. But the idea is she hits on each page whitewashed by cheap meter and meaningless metaphors. Yes, they're usually standard script, even though from days gone by when the officers did write home, they still kept to the norm in description as well as feeling. Then he hits on that. The second half of this is just another barren queen. That's important. Who's stuck on a chessboard and landed in emerald silk, wishing sturgeon caviar, again important, was strawberry pop candy because it ushers me back to my youth. Sorry, barren queen. She's childless. Probably can't have children because he offers up barren. And then he offers up wishing sturgeon caviar. Sturgeon caviar, yes, eggs. Again, reference to the fact that she's barren. Strawberry pop candy because it ushers me back to my youth. The thought of having lost that innocence because she can't bear children. And then she's taking in her medicinal angle, which is burgundy. And she tosses a handkerchief or a shawl over the balcony, watches it spring down. But he also used the thought of a pandemic postpartum. Again, postpartum, reference to birthings. Yes, she is barren. So there's a loss in there. Whether that loss came in the moment during the pandemic, or is just an ideal reference point, pointing out that she is now alone because everything else is dead.
I like that. I like that. And yes, you're right. There is a lot of references to pregnancy, to not being able to bear children. And that would be, go well with your thoughts on the letter being from the officer, like after her husband died in war, because of the fact that, you know, to not only lose one's husband, but to have that burden on your shoulder that you weren't able to carry on his name, you know, would add to the sadness. So really great observations there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Latest version by Hall of Poetry.
All right. And we have a SoundCloud for this. So here we go.
Latest version. A coin with two faces. Land where you fall. Imagination takes us places. No writing on the wall. One day you're a harlot, hedonism at the fore. Next the general wearing scarlet as he heads off to war. Diverse and divergent, the human condition complex. A desire once urgent can soon hit the decks. Leaving us floundering, it's not what we want. Too much propagandering by the devil and his aunt. In light or shade, the band marches on. Energies to be swayed, experiences to be won. Developed by circumstance, necessity worn well. Everything's a mirror dance, falling under life's spell. A ball in the hand, less flighty than a bird. Thrown where you stand, promotes deed over word. Let the general have his day, his strength is a plus. One of many at play in this makeup of us. Let the harlot strut her stuff, she needs to be seen. And when enough is enough, bring out the tambourine. Slow the pace, a one and a two. And rest in this latest version of you. End poem. Sam Hall, Hall of Poetry.
Wonderful read and write there. Thank you very much, Hall of Poetry, for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And what do you think of this, Rex?
A fair warning. Diverse and divergent human condition complex, a desire once urgent can soon hit the decks, leaving us floundering. It's not what we want. Too much propagandering by the devil and his art. In light of shade, the band marches on. That double line right there. Too much propagandering by the devil and his art. You know what? It's a call.
Quit listening to everybody else. You've got your own mind. Use it.
Don't be enshrouded by the insidious nature of that which is. And take things one day at a time. Just hit on that in the back end. Slow the pace. A one and a two, and rest in this latest version of you. The idea, don't take up arms to a hall of your own troubles because someone says something that you might agree with. It doesn't mean a damn thing because that's not your mind actually doing the thinking. So be your own person. You don't have to bite into the corruptibility and thoughts of someone else because they say, oh, you are this or that or something else. They have the slightest bloody idea, and maybe at that point in time you don't either. So give it time.
Amen to that. That is so true. One must learn to think for themselves. And I like how she speaks on the two-faced coin and variations of who you become. And often those variations are because of like you were saying, other people's opinions. One day you're a harlot, hedonism at the fore, next to general wearing scarlet as he heads off to war. Diverse and divergent, the human condition complex. And I like those lines. And, you know, the human condition can definitely be complex. That is for sure. But to me, one day you're a harlot, hedonism at the fore, next general wearing scarlet as he heads off to war, is that idea to me that, you know, at one moment you'll be judged for doing wrong, and the next you'll be, you know, everybody's hero, depending on what they need in the moment. I also like too much propagandering by the devil and his aunt. I like the bit of dark humor in that, and I like that she brings up propaganda because, you know, that's really such a big part of media nowadays and, well, throughout history. But, you know, propaganda is, you know, always there, you know, making sure that, you know, people are twisted and turned the way that they people want them to be. And everything's a mirror dance when fallen under life's spell, a ball in the hand less flighty than a bird. I feel like a ball in the hand less flighty than a bird. For some reason, I picture someone, you know, juggling the balls like a circus act, basically being a clown, putting on a show for everyone else. And I think that comes through also in Bring Out the Tambourine, that idea of rather than being true to oneself, being what other people expect you to be, putting on that show. And I thought this was just a wonderful read and write, great rhyme and flow, and very well done.
And, well, the reality of those open lines might be coming to pass because I hear the draft might be coming back.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I'll have to look into that. Well, at least I don't have to worry about being drafted, but man, that is going to definitely stir up some mixed feelings on all kinds of sides, I guess. It'll be interesting.
And they'll have no choice. Report or get arrested.
Yeah. Well, I guess they can move to Canada.
Well, I don't think you get much help there these days because since the whole world's leaders seem to be following a singular path, if that note to the draft comes true, it'll be for a particular reason, and that's to put people on the ground in Eastern Europe.
Yeah. Yep, I can see that. I can see that. Well, that'll be interesting to see how things go. Yeah. I'll have to look into that. So, what do we have next, Rex?
Discombobulated by Truth Kill. That was yours.
Ah, okay. I think Georgie got it right, exactly what humanity is like. All twisted up inside, not necessarily a bad thing, just another sense of reality. Perception is a potent word. One meaning is to become aware of something through what we are sensing. Really, that doesn't sound too stable to me. Another meaning is the way we interpret a thing, a mental impression. Again, I say, really? Think about the many decisions we have made by way of perception. One too many that we probably should have ran through a committee or at the very least a panel of peers, even family. I chose prompt number 7 after a long debate in my head. Looking at the position she is in made me grin. So much like me, I feel all discombobulated from time to time. Then a great song comes on or I see a great art displayed like what Georgie has made. Did you know that Mr. Korosov began his artistic venture by sculpting pieces using his fingers? With degree in hand, duty called, and the rest of the honorable men off to the service he went? In 1984, finally free, well as free as he could possibly begin, he began the walk that most artists take, the walk of frustration, full of hope, knowing what has to take place, pushing forward to the year 1993, change began to bring prosperity. The United States is blessed to have a man with such grace bring his perspective through the pictures that he paints. So I want to say thanks to Georgie and thanks to the hostess of Break On Through for the wonderful challenges and learning experiences you put a lot of thought into and poem. Well, that was very nice. And what did you think, Rex?
Well, it does bite up top, the idea, but perception is a potent word. One meaning is to become aware of something through what we are sensing. Again, the idea of using feeling as a note to what is. Really, that doesn't sound too stable to me. Another meaning is the way we interpret a thing, a mental impression. Again, that note thought to clarity or discernment. And she also, again, I say, really, think about the many decisions we have made by way of perception. One too many that we probably should have run through a committee or at the very least a panel of peers, even family. The idea of not thinking, not using the clarity of thought and discernment to weigh out what works and what doesn't. Does any of it make any sense? Can I take a piece of this and a piece of this to get through the thought of where I am? Yes. If you're offering up feeling as that note without the clarity or the discernment of the thought to begin with, then you're doing yourself a disservice, which is what she hits on. And then she hits on the idea of being discombobulated from time to time. That's that idea. Again, if you're in that kind of a fix, you need to use discernment and weigh the possibilities. Then finally she just rolls into him himself. So plus a nice note to a thankfulness for the pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful, in part, a wonderful tribute to the artist and his work. And I like how she says, I chose prompt 7 after a long debate in my head. And, you know, I like to hear that people put thought into the prompts they choose or prompt, you know. And I, too, really liked how, I liked also how she went into the information about him, like his journey to become an artist and how first he went through the military and through war I don't know if he went through war. I should have read up more on this artist. I just liked his art. But obviously he served in the military. And so there he was kind of waysided, but it was another part of his life and probably a part of his life that really shaped his artwork and what he's presented up to the viewing public. But I especially like in the beginning the way she digs into the idea of perception and how too often we don't, you know, research, we don't use, as you were saying, Rex, discernment. We react and we use emotion to make a decision that shouldn't be made through emotion. And I like where she says, again, I say, really, think about the many decisions we have made by way of perception. One too many that we probably should have ran through a committee or at the very least a panel of peers, even family. Now, I will say that in my opinion, I do think you need to be a little careful about which peers and family members you ask. I mean, of course, you can always ask, but, you know, in the end, you know, do research, think for yourself. It kind of goes back to the idea that we're talking about the other poem, you know, think for yourself. Review the facts. You know, you have to, you know, especially if claiming something is a science, you have to look at the facts rather than, you know, political agenda or emotional ideology. I don't know if emotional ideology is a thing, but, you know, rather than looking at ideology or how something makes you feel, you have to look at the facts. Just an amazing write, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Triangulate by Eric Svensson. Left pinky elegantly raised, done to enhance perfect pectoral appraisal. Right arm on high to expose royal palmistry. Crowned odalisk king lounges, horned cup enthuses bacchanalian dreams. Red-skirted belly dancer flirts on his outskirts. Triangulate, tease, titillate. Swept up in movement, musical instruments mesmerize, enthuses a butterfly monarch. Scarlet swirls, unreachable pathos of overindulgence. The mind is willing, but the flesh is weak. Titillate, tease, triangulate. Harem nights, turnstile days, skilled belly dancer, bee whizzed around, raised left pinky stamen. Painter ingenuity dangles triangles, complex colored wedges congregate. Draftsman accuracy captures salient sensuality. End poem.
Oh man, this one's great. He wrote to the same picture Betty did, and he really brought out just some fun use of language, a wonderful sense of humor that I very much enjoyed. And you did a great read of that. I really enjoy and appreciate his wordplay. Left pinky elegantly raised, done to enhance perfect pectoral appraisal, right arm on high to expose royal palmistry. Horned cup enthuses Bacchian dreams, red-skirted belly dancer flirts on his outskirts, triangulate, tease, titillate. I like how triangulate, tease, and titillate are not only a wonderful alliteration, give thought to how she knows exactly how to, pose herself. That was great fun. And, double entendre, raised left pinky stamen, was wonderful. And, it's fun. That's what it is. This is a fun write looking at the tease and the flirtation of human sensuality, and bringing in the draughtsman accuracy and the Bacchian dreams. Really, to me it's getting drunk, having a bit of fun, and yeah, I like how it starts out with left pinky elegantly raised. So you're thinking, raising the pinky when you're drinking tea and being all proper. But soon it becomes just as to paraphrase and use Betty's title, night of debauchery, swept up in the moment. And so just a very clever write and great, great indulgence. Very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, between the picture and the thought, the harem and the king, who was that that woman had to tell stories for an amazing length of time so she could keep her head?
Oh, you mean... the one who told stories, like from the night. Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
No, this kind of walks on the same angle, except since he's drunk, all she's got to do is keep the belly dancing going until he finally pants out.
It does. It does have that whole feeling, to it. I know you're talking about someone specific, though. I suspect throughout history there's been a few times where a woman has danced to keep her own head. I know there was one woman in the Bible who danced in order to get John the Baptist's head, but
yeah.
Obviously not the same one. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. But, yeah, I like that. I like that, the whole thought of, yeah, she's dancing to keep herself alive. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, because it goes back to this picture, if you look at it, besides the obvious, again, we have a look of a woman who really, you know, really she does have a look of disinterest on her face. But the king there, or whatever, yeah, I would say a king, with his palm raised up, certainly looks very interested. So, but yeah, if you ever think of who that is, let me know, Rex, because my mind is drawing a blank. But what do we got next, Rex?
The Armadillo by Elizabeth Bishop. This is the time of year when almost every night the frail illegal fire balloons appear, climbing the mountain height, rising toward a saint still honored in these parts, the paper chambers flush and fill with light that comes and goes like hearts. Once up against the sky, it's hard to tell them from the stars, planets, that is, the tinted ones, Venus going down, or Mars, or the pale green one with a wind. They flare and falter, wobble and toss, but if it's still, they steer between the kite sticks of the Southern Cross, receding, dwindling solemnly and steadily forsaking us, or in the downdraft from a peak, suddenly turning dangerous. Last night, another one, big one fell. It splattered like an egg of fire against the cliff behind the house. The flame ran down. We saw the pair of owls who nest there flying up and up, their whirling black and white stained bright pink underneath until they streaked up out of sight. The ancient owl's nest now must have been nest must have burned hastily all alone. A glistening armadillo left the scene, rose slight, head down, tail down. And then a baby rabbit jumped out, short-eared to our surprise, so soft a handful of intangible ash would fix the ignited eyes. Too pretty dreamlike mimicry, a falling fire, piercing cry, and panic, and a weak nailed fist clenched ignorant against the sky. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. I'm surprised you read that one, but thank you for that. You did a wonderful read of it. I like this classic poem. The rhyme, the flow, Elizabeth Bishop, you know, one of my favorites. I like how this speaks on a literal level of the destruction caused by the floating lanterns used to celebrate, you know, many holidays in other areas, and how they look so beautiful. And yet there's this, as she says, in the downdraft from a peak suddenly turning dangerous. Last night, another big one fell. It splattered like an egg of fire against the cliff behind the house. The flames ran down. We saw the pair of owls who nest there flying up. And so to me, this speaks literally on destruction of nature, but it also speaks metaphorically on a destruction of self, on how we become so obsessed with what we think is beautiful, and perhaps, you know, even a person that we think is beautiful, that we are unaware or become unaware until it's too late of the dangers that are, you know, like the red flags. At least that's how I see it. And Rex, what are your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, the paper chambers and this Chinese lantern. The little candle thing in the bottom offers up the heat, which lets them rise and up. so they can be carried along with the wind. Because they're not filled with helium, so to speak. They use the warm air to help lift them. They're actually pretty good, cool. And then the thought is, it's hard to tell them against the backdrop of the stars, except for the obviousness of Venus, Mars. And they flare and fall to wobble and toss, but it's still, they steer between the kite sticks of the Southern Cross. Receding, dwindling, solemnly and steadfastly forsaking us, or in the downdraft on creek, suddenly turning dangerous. The idea of if you're not careful, what you choose as a note of beauty for the evening can turn to a dangerous thing, just like a comet strike. These things can fall down to the point where they set the forest afire, which walks another tone. As she did with the thought of the owl's nest getting burned out, then the armadillo leaving the scene, and the rabbit. Be careful of what you do, because it might backfire.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. And now we're going to start digging into the poetry that was inspired by that poem. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Jaded Black Balloons by Betty Page.
All right. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Jaded Black Balloons. Jaded Black Balloons floats high above desert skies, so invisible, riding amidst stars, getting lost in the darkness, blue sapphire heart, shimmers cascading, popping champagne bubbling, so numb there's no words, like armadillos, stealth with unbreakable shells, drifting as dark clouds, rolling thunderstorms, I'm drinking margaritas as your lightning strikes. Realizing this, I'm addicted yet again. New black balloon drifts. Too high to come down, chasing dragons round and round in opium dens. Hanging with my friends, dangling high from chandeliers above oases. Palm trees and bright lights, sipping neon drinks poolside. Faded tropical, splashes aqua blue, teardrops hide within my eyes, drowns porcelain heart, jaded black balloons, floats high above desert skies, so invisible, too high to come down, chasing dragons round and round in opium dens, like armadillos, stealth with unbreakable shells. Drifting as dark clouds, rolling thunderstorms. I'm drinking margaritas as your lightning strikes. Realizing this, I'm addicted yet again. New black balloon drifts. End poem.
Great read and write, Betty. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really appreciate and enjoy the imagery and metaphors in this, her 5-7-5 line, how she brings in the armadillo. It says, like armadillo stealth with unbreakable shells drifting as dark clouds. I thought this was a great reflection of the prompt. I gave it a bronze because, you know, to me it was powerful and emotionally charged. It spoke on, you know, trying to escape from the pain of love lost within the darkness of fate, and how we try to numb those feelings. To me, it's a great reflection on the prompt because it speaks on self-destructive behavior as a way to deal with emotional pain. And I really like this all the way through, but especially jaded black balloons float high above desert skies, so invisible, like armadillo stealth with unbreakable shells drifting as dark clouds. Wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Yeah, I like the metaphor in this, the starkness of the jaded black balloons and the lightning hits on the raging storm that's roiling within mentality, and then the margaritas and all that bites at the idea of self-medicating. And just like the other one, too high to come down, chasing dragons round and round in opium dens. Again, that sort of self-medication. Then hanging with friends, dancing, again, self-medication. Again, neon drinks poolside. Then a brief splash, aqua blue, teardrops high within my eyes, grounds porcelain heart. Porcelain heart, now you've gone from the armadillo darkness of heart into the porcelain heart, the cracked idea of an easily breakability of porcelain as opposed to the armadillo. And then right back again to the storm raging in mentality.
I like that. Great comment there, Rex. All right. What do we have next?
The Wise Waits by Jenny the Deep.
All right. Promised a red carpet surprise entrance, an armadillo is guided down a cement path. Red it was not, but a rough, cracked patch as he slips through the cracks, Rabbit laughs. Hopping through the blistering hot desert, Jackrabbit hoped to find the chilling dessert. Large ears kept him cool but not so bright. He met his demise trying to run from the sunlight. Only the great owl survived the evening heat, the wisest of the wise. The sun he beat, watching patiently, perched safe in his nest, waiting in the trees, shadows he knew was best. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
I like that note up top. Promised the red carpet sun surprise entrance. It's on that note of red skies at night, stay with the light, meaning the next day will be a beauty of a day, and you got the idea of an armadillo got down a cement path. That's a very dry desert, and I like the back angle in a second, hopping through the blistering hot desert. Jackrabbit hoped to find a chilling dessert. Idea of looking for water. Now the last one with the owl that's hit on that idea, offering up a note of being wise, but also it's a preternatural gait and gaze that plus that head turning delight. It waits patiently and comes swooping in for that note of fuel, that food, that rabbit, or whatever else it might come upon in the evening, where it's cool and he can hunt in peace.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep. I like the imagery in this. I like the flow and how she's told an excellent fable on animals seeking respite from the sun, but really the only one that does it right, as you pointed out, Rex, is the owl. And, you know, this there's a lesson to be learned that you shouldn't look for things where they're not going to be. You shouldn't try to find your answer where it's just going to trip you up and make things worse. Like, don't go rushing forward, you know, looking for something. Rather, sit patiently and wait for the right time. So like most fables, this definitely has a great lesson learned and was very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Knights of the Armadillo, after Bishop and Lowell, by Peter Smallway. A poem for a poem, fair transaction. Skunks at bins equals rabbit offspring. So which came first? Nights of drinking against specialist orders, doctors back then. My guess, Lonely Robert, a lovesick Lowell, skunks corking the sour wine. Elizabeth the Shell before breakfast, women a better choice, easy with the carrot. But amorous histories of confessional poets on the lookout for animals wild. No knights of round tables, tin cans and falling armadillos, poor bomb stumps. We, of all poets, to salivate over soft baby rabbit? A main back lane, more fierce than that, a damsel to stink, rabbit to grill. Ash of Hiroshima, next slumber unwed, dedicated to the union, dead, and poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Peter Solway. I really enjoyed and appreciated this one. I gave this one the gold in the contest. I like that he brought up both Elizabeth Bishop and Robert Powell, because, you know, if you'll notice at the beginning of her poem, it says, for Robert Paul Powell. And they were both confessional poets. And the imagery and metaphors in this are creative and strong, quite brilliant in my opinion, clever wordplay. I really like how, to me, this brings to mind the guilty conscience, which desperately seeks deeper meaning in dead rabbits and romantic musings, where he says, we of all poets to salivate over soft baby rabbits, a main back lane more fierce than that, a damsel to sink, rabbit to grill, ash of Hiroshima, next number unwed, dedicated to the union dead. You know, to me, it's that whole idea of we look at death, we look at destruction, and we try to find that deeper meaning. And anytime rabbits are mentioned, it always makes me think about how rabbits were used for as early pregnancy tests. I also really like Elizabeth to shower before breakfast, women a better choice, easy with the carrot, but amorous histories of confessional poets on the lookout for animals wild. You know, the poets are at times, they are obviously quite romantic, but at the same time, often mentally imbalanced. And I say that with the greatest love and respect, because, you know, I think in part I speak of myself also. To me, this is just a great write on taking a look at the mind of the confessional poet and the need for purpose. And wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I just offer skunks at bins equals rabbit offspring. So which came first? So skunks rolls right into that thought of nights of drinking, the idea of getting a drunk as a skunk and getting into something which delivers you with that rabbit offspring, so to speak. And then nights of drinking gets specialist orders, doctors back then. Kind of, okay. Skunks corking the sour wine. Ooh, something, the spill and the thought of offering up rabbit offspring left a sour taste in that wine. Let's see what else. The lookout for animals wild, well, that bites at the terminology within the two of them. Knights of round tables, long gone. Tin cans and falling armadillos, poor mob stump. And a damsel to sting, a rabbit to grill. Does that kind of paint the idea of, what do we do? Do we take care of it, or do we bring it? Because you just hit on that, dedicated to you, dead and the ass. So,
do we keep it, or do we put it away?
That is the question, yep. Make for a tasty dinner, that's for sure. Great comment there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Havoc from Above by Brandy.
All right. The clear night sky is filled with flickering lights, floating effortlessly on the breeze. What a sight. Somewhat surreal, like flying ghosts set ablaze, set adrift, unable to escape the coming malaise. Some find these fire balloons to be fascinating, disregarding the danger that they refuse any debating, and continue to release these flaming balloons like thoughtless and crazed pyrotechnic baboons. Inevitably, some plummet back onto the ground. As they do, death and destruction soon abound. Flames spread quickly, reaching animal abodes, which affect each one from armadillos to toads. Also, birds and other creatures of the woodland are at risk because of man's irresponsible plan, propelling uncontrollable fire balloons into the air to wreak havoc on flora and fauna without a care. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
That's funny because he just wrote what I actually commented on about the poem to begin with. although there is a question, instead of them being party lights, the those Chinese-type lanterns, they were also used for as a celebration in someone's passing. So this does fit the same, very same motif. Yeah, don't do this in dry season.
Oh, exactly, yeah. I mean, preferably not at all, but especially during dry seasons when the fire danger is really high. I don't know about you guys, I assume so, but like we always get the Smokey the Bear signs that say fire danger high or fire danger low. I like the imagery in this, great rhyme and flow. I like how he took a very literal approach. And while the prompt poem itself does bring up the danger of fire balloons, I felt by Randy writing in such a straightforward way and really focusing on that, with biting lines offered up to me a new perspective on those floating lanterns. Rather, while they are beautiful, they can also be destructive to the natural ecosystem. And I like how he brings in the armadillo, but he also brings in the smaller animals like the toads. You know, oftentimes people forget how important even the smallest of animals can be to the ecosystem. And, you know, I do like the bite in the lines of and continue to release these flaming balloons like thoughtless and crazed pyrotechnic baboons. It also has a message to me of how we're so caught up with what we want in the moment that we don't see the destruction that comes from our choices. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
In Chains to What Remains by Liquid Mind Forever. The bane of persistence proffers coffers of resistance. Nightly takes flight for view in sight. A garden provokes a tired onslaught, evoked necromance, regardless who's right, an endless fight. Trepidation equates to your fate as you wait for war, traps with stink bait allocated. No more do we look for the moon nor wish upon a star. Seemingly, you're agitated. What potion, what quotient of devotion keeps you locked to the grid? God forbid you fall into sleep. It's a murderous expulsion to wipe out a population and get rid, forget it, armadillo's keep. coming and coming and coming some more. In galore, there's more. A peeping torn cock, your thumb, who succumbs the shotgun whore. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And another amazing write by Liquid Mind Forever. I gave her the silver in this contest. I liked her metaphorical approach to answering the prompt poem. Strong imagery and metaphors, again, great inner and end rhyme. I like how there's hard-hitting lines. And to me, this speaks on the wars that nobody wins and the selling of self to gain naught but the roadkill. I particularly like trepidation equates to your fate as you wait for the war, traps with stink bait allocated no more. Do we look for the moon or wish upon a star? Seemingly you're agitated. And I like how, to me, do we look for the moon or wish upon a star is that idea of, you know, put the work into making your dreams come true or stand about hoping they come true. Coming and coming and coming some more and galore, there's more, a peeping Tom cock, your thumb, who succumbs, the shotgun whore. And the shotgun whore, I think to me is that idea of selling ourselves only in the end to just basically lose it all. And at least those are some of the thoughts I get from it. Brilliant, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It is a bite, a full-on metaphor. I like this. Traps with stink bait allocated. quite a word choice there. What potion of devotion keeps you locked to the grid? God forbid you fall into sleep. It's a murderous expulsion to wipe out a population. Get rid, forget it, armadillos, keep. On the one hand, if you take this way, if you've got nightly takes flight of full view in sight, the idea of the owl right there, a garden provokes a tireless onslaught. The thought of rabbits coming in to rummage through your garden, the stink bait allocated, yeah, it might work a little bit, but it doesn't keep everything out. And the thought is that you've got, forget it, armadillos keep. There is that nut wall. If you can get past the shell, you might actually kill the bloody thing. It would make a decent stew. And the back end, the peeping Tom, cock your thumb, who succumbs, the shotgun whore. The idea of that might be a near miss, or you actually blow up the garden itself instead of the meal.
Well, there you go. I could see that. And yeah. And very cool observations there, Rex. Are we done? We're done with rights from that contest, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, I don't want to get into the last contest because I know what will happen. We'll get the classic poem read, but won't be able to get to any of the rights from the contest. So I'm just going to have us promote some upcoming shows. You can join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. You can join Aphasiana Saturday, 12:30 a.m. For Part Sinner, Part Saint. And what do you got going on for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme? And, what contest do you have going on, Rex?
Celebrating Gary Wright, and for Tuesday we've got Sartre and Sapphire, quotes from Sartre, which are pretty satirical in nature, if I do say so. So have a little bite in the fun.
I'm looking forward to both those shows. I know some people that I think would really like to write for the Sartre, so I might give them a little poke. You know, both of those shows are going to be great, wonderful prompt choices. Now, I would like to mention that Fill My Eyes has a couple of contests running for next week. One for Twisted Tuesday is Colosso del Eponino. There's one picture prompt. It's actually Colosso del Eponino is a giant statue. I just highly recommend checking it out. There's both a picture and a video, and the video offers up some extra information about the statue itself. Really interesting stuff. Should be fun to work with. Also, she has a contest up for the Art of Seduction with a few different prompts, with which I offers up, you know, quotes to stir up some sensual ink for sure. I highly recommend checking it out. Now, for next week's Break On Through, we actually have a show on Friday the 13th. And while we do have carryovers, I also have a contest up on superstitions. And basically, I've offered up one picture and a variety of quotes on superstition, plus two songs that have to do with superstition. I forget who they're by. Gosh darn it! I should have wrote it down.
Stevie Wonder.
No. One is okay. Here, let me do this. One is okay. It's Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble doing the actual song by Stevie Wonder, but I'm just such a big fan. And I love Stevie Wonder, but I'm a huge fan of Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble. And then the other one is the song Superstitious by Europe. Or people could just choose their own prompts on the topic. But, yeah, I mean, how could I resist, Rex? How could I resist having a show on Friday the 13th and not putting up a poem or a contest on superstitions? So I hope people have a lot of fun with that one. And, of course, you know, make sure to check out all the poetry topic boards, show topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets. Hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And a couple more contests I want to mention, because I think these ones are important, is Lawrence has a contest up with quotes why am I blanking out on names? Oh, Aleister Crowley. Lawrence has a contest up for the next In Our Craft or Soul and Art with quotes from Aleister Crowley. And Aphasiana and Dan have a contest up for their next Double Helix show, which features the poetry of Ben Hart. So make sure to check those all out. And as always, Rex, thank you very much for being my co-host. Thank you to Hats for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, Dane.